The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Breaking Banks. This is live from Cybus here in Singapore. I'm Rob Finlay, and I'm hosting the show in Brett's stead this week. Brett, as we all know, is very busy traveling all the time. This week, he's in Moscow on the way to South Africa. Obviously, that's the way you go. So, I'm stepping in today, and we're recording this episode, as I said, from the Swift Cybus conference here in Singapore, returning to Singapore, I think, for the first time in about 15 years. So, just a few facts about me. I'm the founder of Next Bank, which is a community driving change for the better in the banking industry worldwide, and we focus on open collaboration on design, innovation, and entrepreneurship in financial services. I'm based in Singapore, and Brett thought it was a great opportunity for us whilst we're in this region for Swift and for Cybus, for Breaking Banks listeners to get more insight into what's happening here in Asia. And I think it's a great idea. So the plan is to make this more of a series of talks that we do, of a podcast that we do, talking about Asia, what's happening in this region, from all the way from Australia and New Zealand up to the top of Asia and across. So look forward to that. What we're going to do first, though, is we're going to talk to Dan O'Pray, who's here from Hyperledger. Now, part of the Cybus conference, there's, of course, the Inner Tribe breakout track. And part of the track is, of course, the Inner Tribe Startup Challenge. And the finals were held here in Singapore this week. And Dan, I believe, was the winner of the Inner Tribe Startup Challenge with Hyperledger. Dan, welcome.
Thank you very much, Rob. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a bit about Hyperledger and what is Hyperledger? Give us the little quick sentence on that.
So there's been a lot of interest around blockchain technology recently, and it's been a big talk of the focus of this conference. So Hyperledger, a year and a half ago, we started recognizing that this technology, far from disrupting banks, actually has a lot of potential to help those same banks improve improve operational efficiency, mm-hmm. And cut reconciliation costs. So Hyperledger was the first of the so-called permissioned ledgers, which means that you can run a blockchain between a group of banks, you know who's validating transactions, and they can all participate in the same network to have a shared, replicated, uniform record of the truth that they can all rely on.
Okay. Before we get into the details of blockchain and the particular applications, tell us a little bit about the experience you've had, I suppose, with the Inner Tribe Challenge, both in the lead-up events, I guess the marketing and the buzz around that, and then, of course, yesterday here at Cybus. Tell us a bit about your experience through that.
Sure. So there were four semifinals, and we were in the New York track, and so that was a great experience. Before that, we had coaching sessions from people from banks, from VCs, generally people across the industry, so that really helped refine the pitch and really run through and get our positioning right to the audience. And obviously, we're targeted towards financial institutions. We're looking to help incumbent institutions improve their existing systems, so actually getting that direct feedback on how to present to them has been extremely helpful. The final yesterday was absolutely brilliant. Again, we had the coaching sessions, which were just as valuable, mm-hmm. but actually being able to speak to an audience which is 99% bankers and get the exposure there and the leads from that has been extremely valuable.
I guess there's a lot more suits in the audience than you're probably used to. I think the Inner Tribe tent or stand, I should say, it was a tent many years ago, but now it's a huge infrastructure. It's a spaceship, that's right. it's always been oversubscribed this week. It was a big demand to know about this sort of technology, right?
Yes, absolutely. So I was also on a panel on Monday called New Kids on the Blockchain.
Right. Yep.
And not only was the Inner Tribe stand completely packed, but the Swift Overflow section was standing room only as well. So delighted with the response and the exposure that both that and the Startup Challenge have given us.
Okay. Quickly then, so tell us a bit about the application of the technology and where it can be done, and then we'll tell the audience a bit more about where they can get in touch with you.
Sure. We're looking at particular use cases around syndicated loans, US Treasury repo, security settlement, and a few more. So we have working technology up and running that we can demo, and we're happy to do so. We're looking next year, we'll be going into production with a few partners that we'll be announcing shortly. And you can find out more information at digitalasset.com. Because we were acquired by Digital Asset actually shortly after the semi-final, as well as Hyperledger.com.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. Well done, Dan. Well deserved. Great. And look forward to hearing more.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, we're going to move on to learn more, a little bit more about the Singapore fintech scene in particular to start with, before we talk to Alex about Sydney. Marcus is here from Startup Bootcamp Fintech. Marcus, you have been here not for a long time. It's a good time, not a long time, right? So you've been here for a short time in Singapore already, but already we've seen, even in that short period of time, the industry making big strides, big changes, and big attention around fintech. Tell us a bit about who you are, why you're here, and Startup Bootcamp Fintech.
Thanks, Rob, and hi, everyone. So, yeah, I came to Singapore exactly 10 months ago. So from London, where fintech is happening, and obviously everyone knows it's one of the hubs of the world. We started Startup Bootcamp Fintech in January this year to take the model we learned in London and take it to the Asian market. The government in Singapore really was clearly saying to us last year, what you've done in London is very impressive, and please help to build a community as well in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
We see the need to help ecosystem that supports entrepreneurs and connects with the banks and the other stakeholders like investors and the regulators. So in the last 10 months, it picked up tremendously,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen a lot of things happening around Singapore and actually beyond Singapore.
Tell us a bit about the program here, what it's like for startups here in Singapore. Are there any sort of subtleties or differences in the program you run compared to what you've seen in Europe and other markets?
So the program is similar. It's a 3-month program where we take in 10 early stage fintech startups as an accelerator.
Mm-hmm.
I think the lead up to it was full of pitch days, or we call them our fast track days.
Right.
We went all across Asia to source the best startups. And interesting enough, out of the 11 we then actually picked, we had 9 teams coming from outside Singapore. So it was really a fully Asian program with a high interest from the regulator. So what has been different to London was that the MAS here in Singapore, the authority, they were coming in every second week, for example, to be part of this and actually learn from the startups. And given the strong support of the government in Singapore, I think we managed to really bring especially these kind of stakeholders into this game this time.
I think it's really important note, right? It's really important to see the involvement of governments being proactive and immersive, but also being a bit open to learning from the industry. Is that something that was different to Europe as well? The mindset and the attitude?
I believe that FCA and FSA in London already was quite progressive in their innovation approach with the innovation hub they built. And Singapore clearly said, we need to build a competitive environment and a landscape that attracts startups and have innovation happening and regulation not stopping it. And they are going through a similar process, I would say, that right now banks are going through. This entire internal cultural change, which happens in the banks in the last 5 years, let's say, is happening as well with the regulators.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are very keen to learn, and it's a two-way communication. So startups share and the regulators share. I think this collaborative approach really then gives a mutual understanding of what we need to do as an ecosystem together.
Sure. In the startups that you've come across and obviously brought to Singapore, have you really seen a particular demand from a certain market that wants to come here to Singapore? Have you seen particular they're going to bring certain technologies down here, or is it really quite diverse?
I think Asia is just so big. It's quite diverse. The one of the most apparent solutions you see is always around payments. Yeah? As Asian countries are going through this entire leapfrogging phase of kind of leapfrogging the cards, and really trying to be cashless societies, it's big on payments. A lot of financial inclusion startups coming, banking the unbanked, especially in Malaysia and Indonesia and Philippines. But then I think any startup likes to be in Singapore right now, given the environment is so friendly for startups and the funding is available like in any other country in Asia at the moment, I would say.
Right.
Yeah, but the trends are, I would say, very similar to European or North American countries.
I guess the key point with any startup, though, is that they're trying to solve problems that are contextual either to their market or for a certain customer base. That's true of fintech and any other industry, of course. Are you seeing the kind of solutions they're trying to create really reflecting this new fintech wave, or are they trying to solve old problems?
I think there are certainly different waves, and the first wave was the last 2 or 3 years where you see many foreigners being here and taking models that worked in the West, peer-to-peer lending, credit scoring, yep. Payments, to really take this and see if it can be localized. That worked, and a big example are comparison websites. CompareAsia is a big one who just raised a Series C round. And now the second wave is starting just now, where you can finally see locals actually taking their local problems and trying to solve with the technology. And that's exciting. And the next wave, which happens very soon, is take fintech in other sectors. Take fintech into insurance, into health tech, into big data and IoT. And that's, I think, where Singapore is also a very good testing ground, given its highly, like, the synergies across sectors.
Just recently, I know you've just sort of entered this new term, this new world, or this new term, RegTech.
Yes.
First of all, tell us what RegTech is, but then tell us a bit about what you've done recently here.
Yeah, RegTech is regulation tech, which
we need another buzzword, right?
Is another buzzword.
We need more of those.
A few more we need now.
Yep.
After blockchain is almost used too much. RegTech is around security. It's KYC, AML compliance. And so I thought we should have a hackathon on compliance, which is quite a different world, I believe. Hackathons and compliance doesn't fit together. But I want to test who's out there in Singapore, what kind of engineers, what kind of solution can they build around KYC, AML, fraud? And we had last weekend hackathon at SGX, and 13 teams came together to work on onboarding processes, on compliance, on fraud gathering. Mm. So it was very interesting that actually you have talent here that is possible, that can actually work on this.
It's really interesting. I'd be interested to know what kind of talent comes together for a RegTech hackathon. Are you seeing there's sort of all kinds of different talents coming together, different perspectives? Is it important to get really senior bankers sitting with fintech startups in that regard?
I mean, I think the average age, we tried to kind of estimate, it was around 38 years old of the people participating in the hackathon.
Yeah.
And people who actually work or worked in a bank, given this complexity of this topic and compliance, you need to have the knowledge that actually you need to know the problem. I think that's also where fintech gets finally deeper and deeper now, because the knowledge is leaving the institutions and is shared with hackers and coders and developers, where so far I think in Asia has been scratched on the surface around very easy B2C solutions. Now it gets deeper and deeper as people in the bank realize there's an opportunity to make outside the bank, start a startup in KYC, in compliance, for example.
You mentioned before about VC. So I'm curious to know about what the VC scene's like, given they're a critical component of the ecosystem here. What's it like here, and what's the attitude of those guys who want to bring Western money, if we can call it that, from the States and Europe coming into Asia? Is it a well-developed VC market here?
I would say the VC market is very in the nascent stages, 5 to 10 years old maybe. The government had good schemes in place in the last 5 years to subsidize certain VC funds and really kicked off this entire venture capital environment. They're all very much early stage funding, and they are not that yet established and educated to do fintech investments, to be honest. It's more around e-commerce, more gaming, consumer-facing products.
Yep.
So there is definitely a gap for educated fintech funds to be here in this market to help startups especially scale across markets, not just Singapore, but also how to go to Malaysia or Indonesia. We see interest from the West. I mean, Cybos here this week, you have a lot of venture capitalists coming to Cybos, and they are all now recognizing, wow, this is here happening in Asia, and we want to be part of this. So more and more funds are looking into either having partners, co-investments, or even moving over here to Singapore to look at it as a fintech hub.
Okay. Yeah. Tell us a bit then, I guess outside Startup Bootcamp fintech, what other things next year will catch your eye? What things do you think will be important for us all here to work on, but also to be aware of or to embrace? I mean, we just heard from Dan from Hyperledger, the idea of an internal ledger or internal blockchain tool. I mean, is this sort of advancement of raw fintech going to be something you're going to look out for next year?
I think, first of all, to look at is the government involvement, which will hopefully deliver some projects after they announced the Fintech Innovation Group, a part of the MS, and this $225 million fund. I think we will hear today from Ravi Menon, the MD, what actually it all means.
You should expand on what that is.
Exactly. He's going to deliver a speech at 4 p.m. around what MIS is going to have, what they're going to do. So there will be more API sandboxes. There will be more frameworks to really test out and give out new licenses to startups. That's a good step. This is one thing that's on the RegTech side, let's say. And then on the FinTech side, I definitely see developments happening in wealth management. Given this new middle class happening in Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, people need new product and they wouldn't necessarily go to these Swiss private banks, for example. So what can you do as a bank to establish new channels in private banking? Yeah. And then obviously a big topic is financial inclusion. I mean, 100 million people unbanked in Indonesia.
Needs to be solved, right?
Yeah,
needs to be solved.
Yeah.
Last question then before the break. So a lot of the audience will probably want to hear about India and China.
Yeah.
If it's even vaguely possible, can you sum those two places up in one sentence in the fintech scene?
Both are very crazy. China is interesting because they have MyBank and WeBank, the new banks of Tencent and Alibaba, which I think are pushing innovation a lot internally. And I wonder why they haven't been here at Cybers, for example.
Right.
With India, it is, again, very government-driven. President Modi gave out 14 payment licenses and also 11 invoice financing licenses. So we see kind of a new kind of bank coming up in India with new niche focus areas. And any other bank in India needs to be financial inclusion now. That's a policy as well.
Sure. I guess these still seem like fairly hard markets for people outside to penetrate. There's enough domestic demand there to really make it a place where the big banks can just do what they want. And that might be okay, but certainly there are banks and other organizations outside those countries that want to try and take some of that huge, vast scale.
Yeah.
And the numbers are pretty astonishing in China and India, of course, right?
Yeah.
So, so they'll be really influential in this whole region, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Korea, Japan, are they also exciting places?
Yeah, I mean, Korea has now, I think the rumors are around $4 billion in funding set aside for fintech development as a government. And Japan is finally catching up with a fintech association. So we will see more stakeholders come together as an ecosystem. But they are a bit outside the current, I think, development and are trying to now build bridges to Sydney, to Singapore, to Hong Kong. And that's going to be, I think, speed up the move of technology and the move of products.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking of Sydney, after the break, we're going to talk to Alex Gandura from Stone and Chalk with Marcus as well. Before we go, of course, a quick thank to our sponsor, Temenos. Really appreciate their support. We really want to thank our media partner here, Inner Tribe at Cybos, who we've had a great time this week, right? It's been a great event.
Yeah.
So after break, Alex will be with us. Marcus will come back as well, and we'll talk to you then.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
World to look like in 2030. This is Rachel Morrissey, the producer of Breaking Banks, and we are joining the UN Global Goals Initiative and participating in Radio Everyone this week from September 25th to October 2nd. Global Goals is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. To find out more about Global Goals and Radio Everyone, go to www.globalgoals.org.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin, a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm Rob Finlay, standing in for Brett King today. And we are here in Singapore at Cybos, the mega finance event, with Marcus Noak from Startup Bootcamp FinTech. And we just had a good chat about the landscape here in Singapore. Very exciting what's happening here in Southeast Asia and the region more broadly. Before we return to Marcus, though, I want to introduce Alex Gandura, the CEO of Stone & Chalk, down there in Sydney, beautiful Australia, of course, the fintech hub really in the country. And Alex previously ran the Barclays Accelerator program in London before returning home. Alex, welcome back to Australia.
Thanks, Rob.
Welcome to Singapore, of course. Can you introduce yourself a bit and tell us a bit about Stone & Chalk?
Yeah, sure. So a bit like Marcus, I returned from London to Sydney at the beginning of the year and have been there for about the last 10 months, obviously. So Stone & Chalk's a not-for-profit, but we're a fintech innovation hub. The best way to describe us is across a couple of dimensions. One, we incubate high-potential fintech startups. Our whole focus as a not-for-profit is that we take no equity or rights on their IP. We're all focused on building the startup ecosystem across fintech. So a key theme for us is that we're really focused around demand-driven innovation. We're working closely with our corporate partners, which represent 25 large Australian and international players across banking, superannuation, insurance, technology, and communications. And the key focus for us is how, through collaboration between these large organizations and startups, can we actually help them scale, right? Because one of the key things that I've learned is that startups need one thing more than funding. They need customers. They need traction. And in fintech in particular, given that quite a large number are B2B or B2B2C, the best way, I believe, to achieve that is through close collaboration with large organizations that can get you to scale a lot quicker.
I have to get this out of the way, Alex. Why is it called Stone & Chalk?
Yeah, I've had that come up a lot of times. Some people think we're a cafe or a really? A modeling brand or something. But
that would be good.
That would be really good. Certainly would help in gender diversity. But where the name comes from is the adage in financial services that some things are sacred, like compliance, regulation, security, for example, privacy, and those things are etched in stone, right? You can't touch those. But everything else is up for grabs, so therefore written in chalk. And that's where the Stone & Chalk comes from.
That probably represents a new outlook on finance now, right? Where we have to think of things as being fluid and and changing and new. How are your member, your members or your clients or your sponsors, how are they reacting to that? As organizations and as an industry, are they doing well at being adaptive now?
Yeah, look, it's really exciting. I think similarly to Singapore, fintech has taken off really in the last 12 months here in Australia. The large banks and superannuation companies have, several have announced their own corporate venturing funds. They're all getting very, very active in starting to collaborate and work with startups in multiple different ways. So they're all really super keen to start working through Stone & Chalk and engaging with some of these guys. We're seeing that, from what I've observed across the US and Europe, the banking environment in Australia is actually quite digitally advanced. Right. So there's a huge opportunity so far as, these organizations have gone through or are in the process of completing their big transformations in terms of their banking platforms and their digital and mobile platforms, which is going to make them a lot more attractive from a startup's perspective in terms of ease of working with, and also the ability to integrate and then, quickly scale through digital channels.
I think about 10 years ago, banks were probably not particularly interested in dealing with startups or even with other parts of a broader ecosystem outside their own universe. But it's been good to see banks sort of open up that way. I think it's a mature sort of stance to have to say, look, we need to interact with small companies that we don't know who they are or where they might go or how they can help us, but we could learn at least from a management culture perspective as much as maybe there's some new solutions there. Have you seen the outlook of very senior leadership in particular, CEO down, and even boards? I'd be interested to know what you think about those boards as well. Has that changed a lot too?
I think it definitely has. 4 years ago when we started this journey in the UK, there was quite a lot of question marks still being asked, or questions being asked, I should say, in terms of, you know, is this going to be a fad? Is this really about payments? There was a lot of concern around, you know, the digital giants like Google, Facebook, Amazon. Right. You know, they were perceived very much as the real competitors to banks, and perhaps in the payments context still are. But now it's quite clear that boards in particular are asking of their executive teams what they're doing around innovation, what they're doing around fintech in particular, and how are they harnessing the opportunities that are out there. And what we're certainly starting to see in the Australian market is a large number of you know, big organisations across these sectors starting to recognise that working with startups poses a much greater opportunity than the approach of trying to defend against startups. And, you know, I think in markets like Singapore, like Australia, like Hong Kong, and other locations in Asia, we don't have the density, we don't have the scale to compete with a US or a Silicon Valley and so forth. Mm-hmm. So really, I think the huge opportunity for these locations is to act as a market and see how through collaboration they can innovate and then bring that innovate and disruption to other markets around the world.
Tell us a bit about, to jump from the big banks down to the startups you mentioned. So what's life like? What's a day in the life like, or a month in the life of a startup at Stone & Chalk? What sort of things do they do? Who do they interact with? What how do you help those guys?
Yeah, look, there's various ways. Some of it's active and some of it's passive too, through the forces of the community and their interactions. So we launched in August this year, and we've already got 150 full-time residents, you know, all in fintech. That comprise about 45 startups. Some of these guys are revenue generating, cash flow positive, you know, 15 to 20 employees. Others are about 6 to 10, just launched, and there's a handful that are, you know, 2 to 3 in size, still a concept and, you know, pre-launch stage. And what we're seeing is that just through the curation of the community, a lot of people are already engaging with one another, picking each other's brains, you know, picking apart their propositions, sharing networks. So just through serendipity of the dynamics of the community, there's quite a lot of interaction happening that is, you know, of huge value.
Is that important to have people sort of smashed into one space together to make things change, or what's
Yeah, definitely. I think there's that natural interaction of test and learn, even amongst peers, right? It's a safe place, and I think even more so in fintech, having a community of peers within fintech is really important. Fintech is a bit unique compared to general entrepreneurship, right? As Marcus was saying, entrepreneurs in the fintech space tend to be 5 to 10 years older on average than a lot of other areas, simply because of the need to understand the complexity, the regulation, that need for expertise and experience. So that in itself is really important, because if you're a serious player in any space, you want to be amongst a serious peer group that you think can add value to you, and vice versa, you can add value back. So that community is vital, and maintaining that standard in that community is vital as well.
Just one more question before we bring Marcus back in. So a little bit more about, you know, you're based in Sydney, but there are lots of other cities in Australia, obviously, that are really starting the very first seeds of strong fintech communities there. There are great banks, obviously, across the country, and good people doing good things, but there needs some coordination. What are your thoughts on how that might evolve in Australia in particular? And even New Zealand, if you want to add that.
Yeah, sure. And I think, you know, it's a great question. And Melbourne is probably the next natural city to be thinking about. And there's been quite a lot of activity starting to happen in Melbourne, in fintech in particular. The government in Victoria is quite keen to see fintech play a prominent role in the startup ecosystem. Some of the banks that are also partners of Stone & Chalk in Sydney are based in Melbourne, as are some of the super funds, etc. So there's a natural, I think, fit for Sydney and Melbourne to collaborate together, such that 1 + 1 = 5. And certainly from a Stone & Chalk perspective, you know, if there's a need and if there's a demand for us to be there, then we will be there. Our focus is really, you know, fintech as a base and as a community and as a potential. We're not about geography.
Marcus, just bringing you back in now. So let's talk a bit about the competitiveness between cities. I mean, we had a battle yesterday about fintech hubs and what the attributes they bring. Is there a tangible tension between cities, a competitiveness, and is it necessary, or will someone win?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always a discussion going on online and on media, who is the fintech capital. I feel like it's everyone against London right now. That's I feel like there's going to be alliances being made in Asia to see how can we be an alternative as a hub and not compete on this who's the best in the world, but to see how we can actually figure out how we're different, unique, and offer something to work together. Also yesterday, the panel was clearly about who we're different. We have something unique to offer to startups and banks, but we need to work together on a level that, that makes sense for everyone. And I keep saying, I do wonder a lot what kind of marketing budget goes into these fintech hubs and what actually is real and what is just marketing from a city of point of view. So in Asia, it's clearly Hong Kong, Singapore, and then Sydney that are on the map, and they're all so unique. And Hong Kong has to offer something that Singapore can't, and Sydney for sure not at all. So we are so different in a way that it's actually very good. And we will define in the near future how are we more unique and how can we offer.
Yeah, it's Alex. I mean, you must sort of see, especially when you look from Sydney out, you see the landscape across Asia in particular, and everyone's announcing, as Marcus said, these sort of funds or programs or activities. And you might look at other markets and think, wow, they've got potentially a lot more resource than we might do in certain countries. Are you worried about that? Is it something you think we should care about, or is it really about expanding the pie?
I think it's about expanding the pie. You know, in this space, as the adage comes from the valley in terms of paying it forward and giving first, right? That having a mindset of abundance is really important. So having Sydney or Singapore or Hong Kong, you know, take some great steps forward in the fintech space is all a good thing, because it helps lift the overall ecosystem around the world. I think that it's quite fun, you know, seeing governments, you know, try and go at each other and proclaim, you know, we're going to be the hub for fintech or something else and throw tons of money at it. And look, that's fine. Ultimately, you know, markets are the most efficient when they're focused around centers of competitive advantage, particularly where they're natural sources of a competitive advantage. And that's where I guess, see that over time, what Hong Kong is going to be known for within the fintech space, Singapore, Australia, you know, Australia or Sydney, whether it's Japan and other locations, I think it'll just start to emerge over time. I think there's absolutely space for all of us. And I think that if we can find models to partner and collaborate together, both in terms of connecting the VC ecosystem, but then also the corporate ecosystem and then the startup ecosystem, then we're all going to be winners. Because ultimately, what we need to be focused on is not about us as cities or us about hubs, but actually us in terms of key enablers of success for the startups that we're responsible for. And if we can make sure that we keep pure to that goal, then it's in the startup's interest that, for example, Sydney and Singapore collaborate and partner really well, and likewise with other cities around the world.
Marcus, obviously, well, Startup Bootcamp FinTech is present in a few cities. Which ones are they?
London so far and Singapore.
Okay.
We're getting very active in other places as well now.
Right, and it makes sense to go to where the FinTech sort of centres are. Alex, do you sort of see that there's a natural network outside Australia for you where you find complementary partners, that you find markets that for your startups are worth going to? Obviously, you had a delegation, I think, recently to the UK to send the startups around. Are there places where you find there'll be a good match for the Australian startups in particular?
Yeah, look, I do. Clearly, the US and the UK, even more so the US, are still the biggest markets. It's still the biggest market in the world in terms of venture capital. So from an investment standpoint, that's always going to be quite attractive, at least for the near future. London provides an interesting gateway into Europe. And then I think there's different, you know, pros and cons of Singapore and Sydney, for example, in terms of the Asian context. Certainly from a startup's perspective, so far as Australia's concerned, you know, we've got a really advanced banking and superannuation industry. There's going to be a huge opportunity for us when we consider the 2 billion additional people in Asia. They're going to enter the middle class over the next few decades and control, you know, the majority of the wealth base here. How our innovation and our technologies can enable wealth management, superannuation, digital banking, etc. And, you know, in the context also of the unbanked, given digital is an asset light approach, how that can actually enable banking to be profitable in serving the lower end of the market. So I think there's a huge potential there. And likewise, in the areas of big data, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning, There's quite a huge push right now in Australian universities and also amongst industry, now that you know they've gone through that digital transformation, to start now understanding and applying intelligence to that data and seeing how you know new services can be offered to customers.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's funny, like to Marcus's point before, the region is so diverse and you know there's such a distribution of ways of working and cultures and religions that influence the way we do business, that it'll be interesting to see where we all end up. We're going to take a break. Thanks, guys. We come back and talk more. Really want to thank Temenos again and Inner Tribe, our media partner here. But stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Time. There's never enough. You just don't have the time to search out all the latest banking innovations from around the world. But the good news is, we've already done it for you at Banking Reports. 700 hours of research goes into each edition of our Global Banking Innovation Monitor. Be smarter and get one step ahead. Get Banking Reports sent quarterly to your inbox. To subscribe, follow us on Twitter at banking_reports.
Hey all, this is Brett King, the host of Breaking Banks. We've got some exciting news for you. We've just joined with Radio Everyone and the United Nations on their Global Goals Initiative. Now, this is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. So, Breaking Banks, we're planning a special episode on October the 1st to talk about the organizations around the world that are using fintech to increase financial inclusion, to eradicate poverty, and reduce inequality. Join us at Breaking Banks and the team at Radio Everyone on the UN Global Goals Initiative to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charge a statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm Rob Finlay, standing in for Brett King, and we are talking to Marcus from Startup Bootcamp and Alex from Stone & Chalk about life in fintech, in Asia, in Australia. And we've been talking a bit about the region, what the different fintech centres have been. I want to jump across back to Europe and to London in particular, where both of you guys have spent some time. Marcus, what sort of startups were you interacting with there? Were they all from Europe? Were they from the UK? Which will lead me to my question about the same here. So tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I think last year in London, when we did our program there, we had, again, out of the 10 teams, 8 came from outside UK. So it was Netherlands, Switzerland, South Africa, Kenya, the USA. They came to London to start something there at fintech. So I don't know the stats exactly, I'm not the right guy to ask, but I believe that also the majority of fintech entrepreneurs in London are actually not British. And that's maybe taken to Singapore, where I can see the same.
I'm sure the British love German people helping them with startups.
Yeah,
so there was never a factor in your life.
At the same time,
there.
I also know people now living in Berlin who are British who started fintech incubators there.
Yeah.
So I think people move around, and the same with Luxembourg. Our friend John Hacker in Switzerland, he's American, he runs FinTech Switzerland there. So I think it's me being a German, lived in London, now being in Singapore. It's in this world, there is no real like where you're from, what's your culture like. And I think in Singapore it's very similar. It has been the last 50 years a hub of diversity completely, and all the different cultures and nations come together in Singapore. And I believe that will be continue in the next few years, and totally reflected in the entire fintech community, where you have Australians, you have Germans, you have British, you have a lot of Malaysians now, Indonesians, Japanese as investors are coming in a lot. So the startup entrepreneurs here in Singapore in fintech are mainly people who worked in a bank, and that is 50-50, locals and expats.
Let's talk about talent for a bit then, Marcus. So yeah. What's the average sort of fintech entrepreneur like in Singapore? And then we'll ask you, Alex, about that in Sydney as well. But sure. What's it like here, and what do you think is needed to help improve that?
So just a little number here. Again, our startup bootcamp, the teams, the average age of the founders were 32 years old. Yeah, and they were like mainly Asian startups. Which means they have worked 5 to 7, 8 years in a bank normally, in different functions, different areas, but are normally then the CEOs, like the ones who actually have the business knowledge, and they find then a CTO who hasn't worked in a bank, and most likely is a bit younger and has normally a computer science degree as a background. So you have this typical hustler, hipster, and hacker team coming together, where the hustler is normally the banking person who left the bank.
Bankers are hustlers? That's a ridiculous statement.
The ones who can sell very well, yeah. So I think obviously, too many stereotypes here, but that's, I would say, the average I can observe. Going into the region and outside Singapore, you see a lot of young people, students doing fintech startups. And these are the consumer-facing startups where they address pain points in personal finance management or in bill splitting or in very easy to hack prototypes. So what's needed, to your question, I think what's needed is it's an environment, a safety net for bankers to leave the bank and actually then do their own startup. Yeah, it's an understanding, education, that it's worthwhile actually leaving these golden handcuffs behind and really go for it.
Alex is the same. I mean, I think there's this really important idea that people who worked in banks for a long time bring just really deep experience, which could help a startup avoid all sorts of pitfalls and problems. Is that what the startups or the entrepreneurs are like in Sydney?
Yeah, well, it's a real mix. We've got people that have come out of banking. We've got people that haven't come out of banking. I don't think there's necessarily a one-size-fits-all type, you know, stereotype in that context. But, you know, in one case, we've got a startup working in stochastic mathematics for a wealth platform that the youngest is 55 years old. They've come out of, you know, PhDs and professors at universities that are experts in that space, and have recognized an incredible opportunity. And, you know, in today's age, with the ability of hiring virtual developers and architects everywhere, you know, they're focusing on the proposition and the IP of all, how all the algorithms work, and are pretty much outsourcing all the IT and the dev. So I think there's quite a nice mix, but certainly experience is very important. And, you know, the ability of bringing together the kind of participants that Marcus is talking about is really key, right? Where you've got the hustler in terms of, you know, getting the deals, seeking the investors, opening doors, and, you know, the real brains around the product, and then the other guys who are either, you know, in-house developers or external, and how they're mixing it up all together. I think every startup needs that kind of a complement. But what's really interesting is that age difference, purely indicative of the fact that it is just so hard in fintech to play in this space if you don't come with a base level of expertise, experience, and understanding in terms of how the industry works, who are the key players, and a lot of the pitfalls, right? Because let's face it, if it was easy, every bank around the world would have been doing this kind of stuff already, and there wouldn't be an opportunity there.
Just to add on this, sorry, because I also, at the same time, I think everyone brings different skill sets to the table. Where bankers only know the knowledge, they might not have the entrepreneurial mindset to build lean and agile products because they're very used to the structured way of thinking in a bank. So what we do also is educate many bankers how to become entrepreneurs. At the same time, we then educate students how to become a banker. You know, so I think there's a lot of skill set, a lot of knowledge that each different person brings to the table, but we have to educate every one of them how to become a good entrepreneur.
Well, I guess bankers traditionally play roles right now as mentors or as advisors, yeah, because they bring this sort of innate expertise, right?
Yeah, and that's the point I was going to make next, in that we've seen that quite naturally one of the first steps for for people in banks that have perhaps a dream or a passion or an interest towards the entrepreneurial space but haven't quite got there, or maybe don't want to go there, they're coming to us and wanting to be mentors, which is fantastic because, you know, you need mentors in a variety of areas. And what naturally we've seen happen is over time, they become more comfortable. You know, the fear associated with the unknown of the startup world starts to fade away. They start to see what startup areas they can add the most value to, the kind of founders that they have the most chemistry with. And then the natural next step is they become an angel investor themselves. So I think there's a huge opportunity for professionals experienced in the industry to get involved, not just as the entrepreneurs working within the startups, but also as board members, advisors, mentors, angel investors themselves, but then also fundamentally super connectors, right? They're opening up their Rolodex and opening doors for the startups themselves, which is hugely, you know, hugely powerful.
This is a broad question about entrepreneurship, and we won't labour too much on being a startup because I know that's part of your main work, but we're going to talk more broadly about the fintech scene. But is being an entrepreneur now the new MBA? Is it really, if their average age is 32, which is what the average age of MBA students was, or is possibly, is it a great MBA, Alex? Is it a great qualification to have a failed or a successful startup?
Well, I think it certainly is something that's hugely valuable. I've got an MBA. You know, I did mine with London Business School and found that to be hugely powerful as well. And in many ways, I found, in a general sense, gave me really good skills to apply into both corporate and even more so into the entrepreneur space. There's many people talking about the MBA through entrepreneurship and many MBA programs trying to introduce entrepreneurship into their curriculum. So I think, without a doubt, I mean, going through an experience of trying to start and grow, you know, and scale a business is going to give you so much tangible knowledge. And, you know, even investors in the Valley these days are starting to say, well, unless you failed, you know, once at least, they're hesitant in some cases to be the first investor in because they don't want you to learn on their money. So it's going to be an interesting play, I think, and an evolution as to how that goes.
Well, my experience as an entrepreneur is I've just basically got grey hair, so it's not gone that well for me. Marcus, you agree? What's it been like seeing your entrepreneurs really sort of mature from having a great idea into essentially maybe fully formed adults possibly, but with an idea now that they feel confident enough to go out into the world and really make their business successful?
That's a plan, huh? But a program like ours with 3 months has an important input and adds value.
Right.
But it's such a long journey. I mean, you think about it takes 5, 6, 7 years to build a successful company. And I, we had demo day at the end of July, sorry. And since then, a few moved back to the other countries. Now we have 3 startups that raised rounds already, which is very good. Toast recently, last week, announced $1.2 million in investment, which is very good. It's, I think we have to continue mentoring, continue introduction, and continue to really help them get them off the ground because there's so much more you can do. And then it comes to the point where they need to scale. And that's actually where it gets really tricky. Yeah.
Let's talk more then about fintech as a body of activity, as an area of activity for the industry. Marcus, first of all, do the bankers here in Asia understand what fintech is?
No. I think it's so early, and now the government and banks help to push this topic and really create a buzz around it. But this is in Singapore, maybe it's Hong Kong. But if you go to any other country, it's so new, and only a very small part of the community actually knows what fintech is. I just came back this morning from another conference, a corporate innovation conference, and everyone was dressed up in a suit and in a tie talking about fintech. I couldn't believe it. I mean, this is just doesn't feel right. But this is even Singapore. But yeah, I think other markets are even way more behind. And it's coming, though. It's coming.
Alex, I presume the Aussie bankers might be the same. Are they still trying to learn about where it applies in their business or how deep it can affect the industry? Are they still trying to learn where that point is? It's quite a blurred line still.
Yeah, I get the impression that they're probably a fair bit progressed beyond where it seems Singapore might be, for example. I mean, several of the organisations have innovation labs. You don't see the suit and ties in quite a large number of the big organisations back there. Certainly those that are working in the innovation space, they've already industrialized, you know, agile methodology, lean startup, and user-centered design within a lot of their organizations in terms of the groups that are pumping out product. But having said that, I think everyone's always learning in terms of what is fintech, how that evolves, and how it applies both to their business and their industry. So in terms of the embracing and that collaboration between these incumbents and startups, I think that's still in the early stages, and that, you know, organizations and executives are still thinking through going from a paradigm of everything in-house and, you know, keeping it all buttoned down, how might they go about collaborating and partnering and co-creating with startups? And I think that's the stage that Australia is at right now in taking that next step.
Marcus touched before on regulators and their openness, and you touched at the start about the type of areas you're doing, big data and some blockchain and Bitcoin stuff, I suppose. What's it like in Australia from a regulatory perspective? What's the infrastructure of the industry like to allow these kind of sweeping transformational changes to come through?
Yeah, I guess in many respects, similarly to the MAS here, the regulator we have is two, the predominant one for us is ASIC, and ASIC's already announced their equivalent of the innovation hub that the FCA has been doing in London. Likewise, they've got a partnership with Stone and Chalk. So their representatives are having a presence within our hub and working directly with some of our startups in terms of their regulation and licensing needs. So they've recognised themselves the importance of taking a different approach towards fintech and fintech startups and seeing how they can actually support and enable fintech in terms of its development, as opposed to the more traditional role they've played with the large banks, for example.
Marcus, what do you sort of see in the future here for the industry? I suppose we're going to see a lot of change, a lot of consolidation potentially. We're going to see some cross-border activity. In the last couple of minutes here, we're trying to really sum up where you guys each think the opportunities are for people listening who want to come to the market or want to get involved. Where should they start, Marcus?
I think what we're going to see in Singapore especially is more and more tech giants like Alibaba, like Facebook, like Amazon or Lazada come into the market and offering more consumer-facing products. So the B2C side will be taken by larger tech companies, which leaves startups more or less squeezed in the middle, now looking more and more to work with banks. So I predict that Singapore is becoming more of a B2B hub for fintech startups, especially around regulation tech and the fraud and security. And also, I think then go look into the region, we will sort of see way more B2C products.
Great. Alex, final words from you a bit about Australia in the same context. So what's the thing that you see coming, and what should we, if you wanted to enter the Australian market, what should we do?
Yeah, I think there's quite a lot of focus right now in terms of collaboration. So a lot of the startups that we're supporting are already thinking around partnering with large organizations in mind, but not just actually in Australia, but also with global and regional players, and seeing that as a really good option in terms of scaling fast. In terms of playing, we're partnering with other cities around the world and other hubs around the world. So we see that there's a great potential to be a landing pad and a launch pad, both for smart money, you know, VCs and angels, as well as talented startups that are looking to leverage, what Sydney and Australia has to offer. In terms of helping them on their scale journey.
Great. I want to thank very much Dan O'Pray from Hyperledger. We want to thank Marcus from Startup Bootcamp FinTech. Alex, thank you very much from Stone and Chalk. Welcome to Singapore.
Yeah, terrific.
Alex.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys. Look, big thank you, of course, to Temenos. A big thank you, of course, to InnerTribe for having us here. And, of course, it's time for Mr. Ron Shevlin's moment of snark.
Remember the scene from the movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where some guy is going through town yelling, "Bring out your dead! Bring out your dead!" And some guy brings out this older guy in a cart. Only thing is, the older guy isn't really dead, and he keeps saying, "I'm not dead yet." Kind of reminds me of bank branches. I admit, the data and trends don't look promising, but I can't help but believe that there are things banks can do to revive branches. And here are four ideas for you to consider. Number one, turn branches into bankerons. Let's be honest, many of the folks working in branches do nothing but take the order when a customer comes in. If they're going to take my financial order, why not combine my food order with my checking account order? Reality is, I'm a lot more likely to go to a restaurant to eat than go to a branch to do my banking. But if you combine the two... Okay, number two, thin spas. Personally, I'm not one to get my nails done, but if my wife and three daughters are engaged in the demand, a lot of people do. Now, could it really be that hard to train manicurists to engage customers in discussions about their financial needs? Here's my third idea, HOSPA banks. People who go to the hospital spend a lot of their time there heavily medicated. What better time is there to sell someone banking, investment, and insurance services? And finally, number four, bankerberries. Community banks and credit unions should take over the libraries in the towns where they have a footprint. They'll get a decent amount of footprint to these bankabraries, and very importantly, traffic across a wide range of ages. They'll have data about what people are reading, and they'll be able to use that data to personalize marketing messages and offers. For example, after seeing that I've taken out 6 Stephen King books in the past year, my bank could send me an offer with a picture of Jack Nicholson looking through the door he just chopped down in The Shining with the message, "Here's your credit card offer." Now, I can't guarantee that any of these 4 ideas will actually work, since no bank or credit union has actually implemented them. But if your branches are on the cart mumbling, "We're not dead yet," could it really hurt to give one of these ideas a try? I'm Ron Shevlin, and this is the Moment of Snark on Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, for more of the latest in fintech news.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.